Africa is for Africans, Asia is for Asians, white countries are for everybody. This is a violation of the United Nations Convention Against Genocide.
An unrelenting stream of immigration, non-stop.
Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century.
The fact of the matter is, the UK is never going to be white again.
The biggest genocide in human history.
Us, but they can't refute us. It's the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff.
Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 10, recorded May 17th, 2019. Today's topic is Dirk Moses and the Genocide Awareness Fraud. How you doing, Laura?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing well.
All right. Ken found this genocide studies professor called Dirk Moses. So he had some high hopes that he could actually get this Professor Moses to talk about white genocide. So Ken started interacting with Professor Moses on Twitter and through email, and we're going to talk about that. And this was April 23rd, 2019.
When I initially emailed the guy, I kind of figured he was a fraud, but I'm like, hey, you never know. I'm going to send him an email, and I'm going to be polite and say, hey, you know, what you described in your paper about white genocide is not the actual claim. This is, you know... It's the same kind of thing that New York Times did. They didn't put the actual claim. They made up their own version and decided to refute their own version. It's a typical straw man. And of course, their version is, massive immigration and low birth rates is not genocide. Okay, well, that's true. It isn't genocide. And we never said it was. What our claim is that massive third world immigration and forced assimilation onto every and only white countries is clearly genocide when you look at the UN definition, at the laws, be it the UN definition or the criminal code within the United States. It's clearly genocide. Mass immigration, forced assimilation. You're essentially drowning white people out with immigrants and then refusing white people any method of self determination to allow them to have their own territory and their own means of continuing their culture and their people. That's what white genocide is about. And of course, once you investigate it, it's clear that it is genocide. And that's kind of where Dirk came into a problem there, is because we introduced the actual accusation to him, to him, and he is unable to respond to it. He doesn't know how. And so he questions intent. He says, well, I don't see intent.
Yeah. He acts like any criminal, yeah.
You're right.
Trying to find a loophole.
Yeah.
But this
every defendant on trial is still waiting to see evidence. They can't find a shred of evidence of their own guilt. Gee, imagine that.
Right. So this whole industry, this whole the Holocaust industry and the genocide awareness industry, the whole point of it is to demoralize white people and extract money from them. It's not to raise awareness of anything in particular. It's an attack. It's part of the attack on white people. So when we bring up white genocide, obviously we have this gigantic, contradiction. Yes. Here. So white genocide just blows up their whole system.
Yeah, it crosses their wires and they get a short circuit, and these robotic NPCs are just all over the place. They're all over the shop.
Like the computers in Star Trek, when they they introduce a contradiction to them and they start smoking and blow up.
Yeah, you know? And I think a lot of these people that jump in it, they initially jump in the field of humanities, quote unquote, and genocide research with the idea that all they're doing is just going to be saving brown people. And it's a good way for them to virtue signal and feel good about themselves, that they're going around and saving all the brown people. And so people like Dirk and these other people, never, it never even occurred to them ever until we bring it up to them, that white people have human rights, that human rights should apply to white people. Currently, they don't, but they should. And so now we're putting them in a situation where, as people that are in this field of humanities and genocide research, they have a moral obligation to listen to what we're saying. And most of them lack the courage or integrity to discuss it. They're in the wrong field. They should have picked another field where they, you know, where integrity and courage is not a part of the job description.
And Dirk is an Australian, and he writes for the Journal of Genocide Research. And he was in New Jersey, wasn't it, Ken? Was it New Jersey? And he was doing a conference there.
Rutgers University.
It was at Rutgers. I originally contacted him. He did an article about white genocide on his genocide journal, mm-hmm. where a lot of people submit articles and things like that. And he wrote something up. And I responded back to him. Basically, my email was this. Hello, my name is Ken. I'm reaching out to you in good faith that you would like to have an open, honest, and fair discussion about white genocide. I am the web designer and podcaster from fightwhitegenocide.com, the most popular website regarding the white genocide claim. I am just a high school graduate. I'm not a lawyer in the crime of genocide, but I am an expert on what the accusation of white genocide is and isn't, as I have been one of the main proponents and activists discussing this very issue. I'd like to go over some points with you with your recent essay. In short, white genocide is massive immigration plus forced assimilation onto every and only white countries. White genocide is not the claim that low birth rates and mass immigration is genocide. That is only part of it. Just as the Holocaust is about more than just train rides and camps. I see only two sentences in your essay where you even attempt to refute the accusation of genocide. And here's the quote that he has that I'm referring to. Lemkin did not think cultural and demographic change were genocidal. Only coercive measures could be. And then only with the intention to destroy a group. Such an intention cannot be attributed to European or other states, Tarrant and others mentioned. This is a fantastical paranoia based on obdurate blindness to how power works, policy is generated, and processes unfold. That's his quote. And I replied that Lemkin did believe in cultural genocide. You have noted this numerous times in your own writings. Although I know you were not a subscriber to his philosophy on assimilation. Regardless, the claim of white genocide is not just a claim of cultural genocide. It is a claim of national, ethnic, and racial genocide. And to some extent, Christian genocide as well. What my site is exposing is the largest program of genocide in human history. As far as demographic change, quote unquote, genocide can be defined as forced demographic change. And that is exactly what is happening to the West. The evidence of coercion is endless, from Nicolas Sarkozy talking about implementing coercive measures to speed up miscegenation, to anti-racist groups and media attempting to coerce and gaslight the public into embracing white genocide out of fear of being labeled, quote, white supremacists and, quote, haters. Many of the groups that slander whites are on official advisory groups of governments. There are also speech laws where it is a criminal act in many countries to object to this demographic change or even question immigration policies, like in Sweden. We also have UN spokesmen on video saying the goal is to undermine European homogeneity. Again, the amount of evidence of coercion is endless. You turn on the national news today and you'll see it within 5 minutes. As far as specific intent, for decades the mass media has bragged about the brown future of America. If you are aware that your policies are destroying a group and you refuse to stop, that is specific intent, even if those policies were allegedly instituted as noble or in goodwill. I am more than willing to have a civil and fair discussion on this topic via Skype, phone, or even in person at a seminar. I will answer any questions you or others might have about the claim. Even if you aren't subscribing to the claim, would it not be in the best interest of your field to at least acknowledge what the claim is rather than allowing it to remain obfuscated. Wouldn't the latter be coercion and a vindication of the accusation? Again, I'm willing to discuss this in good faith in an open, honest, and civil forum. Thanks for your time, Ken.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty reasonable. I don't see you inciting any violence there. Did you, Laura, see any?
No. It sounded very professional to me.
Very polite, actually.
This is what he responded. Dear Ken, thanks for yours. I'll reply properly shortly, but first a question. How did you find my private Hotmail number, and why are you using it instead of my university address, which readily available on my homepage?
If anyone else was emailing him, is that the first thing you'd say?
Right, and just to clarify, it was very easy. I think you did a search, didn't you, on his website or something, Ken, and you did a whois, and you got his email address so that you could.
Yeah,
you had good reason not to use his university address, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've done a lot of emails on white genocide in the past, and I explained this to him in the email. Is that a lot of times when I'm emailing universities, I get these auto replies that they're out of the office or things like that. And I know that Dirk was traveling around, so I figured I'd just contact his personal email just so I know that he's getting this.
And it was very easy to get, right?
I'm sorry?
And his personal email was very easy to get, right? You didn't need the NSA or Russian intelligence, right?
I did a who is search on his website, and boom, up pops his email address. Not a Russian hacker.
Excuse me. Then he comes back with another reply. Said, Ken, thanks for the update. I appreciate your clarification on your white genocide position in your first email. I hope you'll permit me to refer to it and mention your name in my presentation. Or we hope he did.
Dirk's first question was, since I see various white genocide sites and Twitter accounts, is there an official one? Is there a network of white genocide activists?
Yeah.
And I said, no idea. Yeah. If any
Does
other
it
group...
matter? Doesn't
if
matter.
Any other group were objecting to genocide, is this the first question you would ask them? Which is obviously it wouldn't. We can't speak for other groups, but we do denounce violence, which we'll bring up here in a little bit. Secondly, Dirk said, have you seen this book and discussion from Kathleen Belew, which documents white nationalist violence? Rise of White Power. Would it describe the white genocide movement? In particular, the author refers to a revolutionary movement in the U.S. to forge, protect an Aryan nation. And my answer was, there is nothing Kathleen Belew could say that would justify genocide or justify denying us our right to object to genocide. And that is really the correct answer whenever they bring anything like that up.
And I didn't read her book, but I did read the synopsis. He sent a link and I read it. And in that synopsis, she's saying that those of us that are talking about white genocide, our intent is that we want the whole world to be white, that we want to take over the world.
That's not true.
Was part of it in there. I could go and find that exact quote, but that was the general synopsis of her book, is that we want to take over the world. Meanwhile, in reality, anti-whites want the entire world to be non-white, and all we are saying is, hey, maybe white people should have human right to self-determination in their own territory. We're not talking about taking over the world. We don't want the whole world to be white. We just want self-determination. And right now, due to forced assimilation and mass immigration, we are being systematically denied that.
Now, earlier, Ken, you talked about we don't want to make the whole world white. But there is an underlying white supremacy here assumed by everybody. They just assume that if whites are allowed to have territory anywhere, eventually they will take over the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what they're saying is,
this capability over all the non-white world, apparently.
What they're saying is, we can't live together.
Yeah.
It's us or them. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
We're not saying, but that's what they're saying.
That's
we
true.
Have to get rid of all white people, or they will take over the planet. So they're assuming white superiority.
They do it all the time, it's so routine to them that they don't even realize it. It's a reflex now. You know, you watch the news and they talk about like the idea that having brown people live in brown countries is somehow inhumane.
Mm.
And that whites have some kind of moral obligation, apparently, because the media, the mass media and academia believe that white people are some kind of superior race and that we have a moral obligation to take in the entire world and train them to be white people. That's basically the entire media academia narrative in a nutshell. And once you look at it and pan out and look at the whole big picture, this is what it is. And it's quite possibly the most white supremacist worldview I've ever seen before. I've talked to a lot of pro-whites, and I've never seen them as white supremacist as the typical white, anti-white, or quote-unquote anti-racist. I've never heard it. Not saying that they don't exist, not saying that there are these white people that are on our side that believe whites are some kind of master race or whatever, but the fact is, every anti-racist believes that. Every white anti-racist, at least, believes that white people are some kind of superior race.
Yeah, white...
from the conversations that I've had, this is what I've come to the conclusion to. And if you have conversations with them, it's the only conclusion you can come to.
Yeah, they assume that the non-whites can't take care of themselves. Whites are obligated to take care of them. This is exactly how colonialism was justified.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just flipped around now. It's just colonialism, but now internal colonialism. It's saying, yeah, we have to take care of these people, but now we're going to, instead of going over there and running things, we're going to let them come here.
Mm. Yeah.
But the impulse is exactly the same. Take up the white man's burden.
Now, as if now it's just self-destructive. All these places were poor before white people got there. White people didn't cause poverty. Everywhere white people interact with them, they get richer. They get better off, way better off. Mm. Much higher populations.
White people aren't messing around with North Korea, but they are South Korea. You know, I initiated the conversation. The initial email was something I wrote up myself. And then he responded, which I didn't even expect a response. And then I let Laura and Jeff know, and then they helped out. And Jeff wrote basically the majority of the other responses to it.
Yeah, I'm not as diplomatic with frauds, especially.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I initially contacted him, I kind of figured he was a fraud. But I always figure, hey, why not? What will it hurt? Maybe if you're nice to this guy, maybe he'll be a genuine person with some integrity. Because I know that we're right about what we have to say on this topic. So I figure anybody with integrity will realize that and come along on the ride with us on that. I didn't expect him to have the integrity. And of course, that's the way it bared out.
And then the third question he said, which brings me to the New Zealand massacre.
Obviously.
Just to jump there, but brings me to the New Zealand massacre. Did your site make a statement about it and such violence in general? As you can see from my little article, I suggest that invoking the genocide concept inevitably entails importing an apocalyptic panic tone into politics, which can lead some unhinged people to seek to prevent the said genocide. See what I mean? So I think, you know, that's an interesting one that he...
anything you say could... pointing out any crime could make his people mad, I suppose. Or anything you say, any political position could make some people mad.
Absolutely.
Even if it's non-political. It could be over a sandwich. I mean, you could say anything and it might offend somebody them over. Make them become unhinged.
Yeah. So. Well, in the first bit there, he said, did your site make a statement about it and such violence in general? And yes, we did. We did a recording on that after that incident. And I replied,
unlike CBS, I gave a link to them explicitly promoting political violence. We unequivocally condemn, denounce, and disavow the use of violence to achieve political ends. Yeah.
Exactly. And we did make that statement.
And I think that's pretty clear. We do podcasts. We don't go around, broadcasting fights or anything like that or violence. I mean, we're about discussion and diplomacy. That's what we do here. And anybody that comes along that ever discusses violence, which, again, through all the pro-whites that I've talked to, I've never heard any of them talk about doing any harm to anybody. This is all a creation being made up by the media. And again, it's not to say that there aren't unhinged people that might hear the message and take it the wrong way and become violent, but they do that with all kinds of issues. This Tarrant guy in New Zealand, he was also a big time proponent of global warming advocacy. So you could just as easily blame the climate change crowd on this shooting, because he also believes in that.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, talk about apocalyptic tone.
That's the name of my new band, by the way.
And in response to that bit here, this was our response. You can't get more apocalyptic than climate change advocates. Do you think climate change advocates should be censored due to the threat of eco-terrorism? It's strange for someone who makes his living talking about genocide while avoiding the largest genocide in history, white genocide, feigning concern about an apocalyptic tone.
Yeah, his whole job is an apocalyptic tone, isn't it?
Exactly. And I mean, you know, we discussed this as well about his claim of apocalyptic and panic tone. We've drawn those similarities with
global warming.
Global warming, yeah.
But nothing more apocalyptic than that. They got movies of the, you know, floods and storms and hurricanes and buildings coming down and millions of people having to move.
Yeah, and later on, he actually defended that and said, there's good reason to be apocalyptic about global warming. This guy is funny.
You know, exactly. And who wouldn't, in the face of genocide, what group wouldn't be panicked or fearing or, you know, wanting to have the discussion and getting the information out there, you know? Like, he's saying that, again, the threat of violence is a reason to deny any discussion of this.
Or fighting back, however misguided that might be,
You know, we don't demand that the whole world be white, but anti-whites demand that the whole world become non-white. Anti-whites demand the conditions that will lead to a future without white people. But this is, you know, exactly. You know, we aren't demanding that whites rule or anything like that.
That's the nature of wordism. That it has to spread over the entire planet. They think they have the correct ideology, and so everybody else has to follow it. Right. Whereas the nationalists don't think that way. We just want what's good for us.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as we continued there, every tyrant justifies censorship because it might cause trouble. The fact that you're bringing up the same lame excuse for censorship that every tyrant throughout all of history has used calls your credibility into question. Censorship of objection to white genocide puts you under suspicion of genocide. As you know or should know, complicity in genocide is genocide. Censorship causes violence. Anyone advocating censorship wants violence. The more censorship you demand, the more violence you want. Today, all the threats of violence which lead to censorship come from the anti-white left. Pro-whites and conservatives are not even allowed to speak on campuses due to threats of violence from anti-white thugs. It's your credibility that is at stake here. You can prove yourself to be an honest truth seeker or a fraud. The choice is yours. If you don't let us speak, you are admitting we're right. We will watch and comment. I mean, we give him so many indications of that, you know, he was on warning, you know, that we will be watching what he was going to and say and how he was going to present the straw man argument against white genocide.
And that's precisely why there is no video of his last speech. And he doesn't have the speech written down anywhere. It's like the speech never happened. He wants to forget about it.
It is a shame that we couldn't get out there. But
yeah, I know.
That was...
I wanted to. But New Jersey's kind of far from where I am, so... Wasn't able to. Maybe next time.
Anyway, this was his response to our last email. Thanks for yours, Ken. I'll continue with the numbering system for the sake of clarity. 1. Researchers are always interested in whether a case they encounter is representative and whether it is part of a broader social and political movement.
My question is this the first question you'd ask any other person talking about genocide? And he didn't respond, you know.
No.
He didn't say yes or no.
And he says 2 and 3, which brings me to Bellew, Kathleen Bellew. I don't understand your answer. She lays out a range of white nationalist groups most disposed to revolutionary violence. What I understand from your answer is that you're you disavow their means, violence, I'm very glad you do, though perhaps not their aims, though I am unsure. It would be good to know.
Well, isn't it the means that are the problem? That's what you claim is the problem. It's because some of us are violent. If we're not violent, then what's the problem?
Exactly. Shouldn't we be allowed to have a discussion?
Maybe it's youth that are worried about our aims, which is the survival of the white race.
Right. It would be good to know where white genocide activists like you situate yourselves in relation to the kind of people she has traced in her exhaustive research. I read her book as a reconstruction of a field of politics, and many people want to know where the white genocide movement fits into that field, if at all.
Well, we disavow violence. We made that pretty clear.
Right.
I mean, if yes, Black Lives Matter, you know, what about this Mike Xavier Johnson that shot five cops? Is that your first question to ask to them? We want to know your relationship to mass cop murders.
Yeah, I mean, that's
does that have any real relevance to what your movement is about? Most of my interaction with other groups is to complain that they won't stay on message or repeat our talking points that actually work.
Yeah,
most of it's criticism.
And if Dirk actually did his research, he would know that.
Exactly.
If he did his research on white genocide, he would know who we are, and he would know how we are different, and we're the first ones to call out other pro-whites on things, on topics that they discuss that really are not productive and are not leading to the conversation that needs to be had.
It was like he got to a point and then realized, I can't take this on. Yeah. So he ended up just backing out. You know, mm-hmm. he wouldn't answer any of our questions. The last bit here in his email says, as for your other comments, you write, all the threats of violence which lead to censorship come from the anti-white left. If you've posted evidence for this proposition on your site, would you mind sending the link so I can read it? I don't believe I mentioned censorship, though I see from your material on your site that this issue is paramount for white genocide activists. Hell yeah, it is.
Everything.
That's the most censored group.
Why wouldn't we be concerned about
We've got a message and we're being told we're not allowed to.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a very legitimate claim that we have here, a message. We're talking about, you know, stopping a program of genocide. We're talking about human right to self-determination. We have a great case laid out that we are being denied self-determination and the policies in place are indeed genocide. So why shouldn't we be allowed to discuss that?
Which side is more credible, the one that wants to talk about it or the one that doesn't?
Yeah.
The ones to censor it, exactly, yeah.
Right. That's what it all comes down to.
What was that saying that about the required truth? You know, anything that you're required to believe?
Anything governments require you to believe is a lie. Anything governments require you to disbelieve must be true.
Right. I mean, that's it, you know. Exactly with what we're dealing with, and the fact that he can't see that censorship is a paramount issue for us because we're denied a platform, or
white genocide is not happening. Why aren't we allowed to talk about
it? Yeah,
or if it's so easy to refute, you know,
right?
Yeah.
Apparently, it's a fantasy, and you know, we're talking about leprechauns and unicorns, and they can disprove it in a conversation, and it's spreading around, and they are very concerned, apparently, according to Congress, that they are very concerned about this message getting out there. Obviously, they can refute it, so why aren't we discussing it?
In other words, if there's nothing to it, then
why the hearings?
What is the problem?
The censorship? Yeah. Why are they doing all the things that they are doing regarding this if it's all silly and a fantasy?
Mm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Anything governments require you to disbelieve must be true.
And it's, you know, he goes into saying about asking for evidence of why all threats of violence which lead to censorship come from the anti-white left, the statement that we made. I mean, how much more evidence do you need? How many more incidences at universities where pro-whites or whites or conservatives even are denied the right to speak? And are told due to the threat of violence that they cannot hold their meetings and speak about the issues that they want to speak about.
I mean, you had riots at Berkeley over Milo and Ann Coulter and all these other people where they come and they threaten white people who want to speak about issues. Most of these people aren't even talking about white genocide, by the way.
Yeah. But Trump's Chicago rally was shut down because of violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because anti-whites were threatening violence. Right. It's not because, and they blame for some reason, white people get blamed for that. That mm-hmm. when anti-whites are threatening violence, then all of a sudden it's the fault of white people for organizing and having rallies or some kind of event. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. And
I mean, there's just so much evidence out there. I mean, there was a young girl on Fox News who I can't remember the university she went to, but she was with Tucker Carlson having a chat, and she was just a pretty young white girl who obviously was a conservative, Republican conservative, and she was speaking about how all the censorship on campuses, and if you don't hold the approved positions on issues, then you will be harassed and hated and screamed at and threatened, and it is vile what's going on in the universities. That I mean, there is so much evidence that this guy, he's just
blind. He's being deceptive. Stupid. He's being deceptive. He knows. Yeah. He knows about all these incidents. He's just me not understand.
Show me. Yeah.
Well, seriously.
Well, this is our claim, So we don't necessarily have to provide evidence for it. That's our claim, The audience can decide whether we're right or not.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
But he demands all this evidence. Well, if you're a fraud, you don't care about evidence.
Right. If you're complicit in a crime, you don't give a rat's ass about the evidence. Right. And it's just that simple. I mean, every defendant on trial is not convinced by the evidence against them. They never are. Mm.
Yeah, well,
show us, Dirk. Show us where a conservative has been allowed to speak, or that we're allowed to go and speak about our issues on campuses.
I offered to fly to New Jersey on my own dime to go speak at this event. I offered him that, and
he comes in. He says, "I'm not in charge of the Rutgers conference. I'm just an invited speaker. I have nothing to do with the attendance." And then he says, "I'm not entirely familiar with the campus situation in the U.S. as I'm based in Australia, though visiting the U.S. now. But my impression is that many types of speakers are excluded." Yeah, right. "I've seen an Islamist speaker refused permission to address a student group on campus because the people you call pro-white and conservative objected. The free speech issue is tricky."
I don't know any pro-white group that was trying to shut down Muslim speakers.
Yeah.
So there's nobody affiliated with us. We would never even say that. I mean,
that the only time that would ever happen would be a neocon objecting to any criticism of Jews from a Muslim.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro type. I mean, that's basically, that's who would do that kind of stuff. We would never, we don't care about that. We don't care if Muslims are allowed to speak.
Right.
We have nothing against that, so.
If there was some incitement of violence or they're inciting violence, then yes, they should be. I mean, but that is the only time that any group should be shut down, if there is an incitement of violence. And I mean, we've got CBS now outright inciting violence against pro-whites. So I don't know how much more blatant it's got to get for people.
Here's how they really think about violence.
To hit a Nazi unprovoked?
I was always taught to never throw the first punch, never instigate, defend, but don't attack. But then I saw a video of the white nationalist Richard Spencer being punched in the face during an interview, and I realized Spencer was in a press suit, wearing a tie, being interviewed like his opinion mattered, like he should be considered part of the conversation, like neo-Nazism was just one political point of view. And then I realized there's no better way to show some speech is not equal. Some speech requires a more visceral response. It's like Overton's window. That's the term from which ideas are tolerated in public discourse. Well, Overton's window doesn't mean shit unless it comes with some enforcement. So yeah, this is enforcement. It's time to punch a few Nazis.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's how they really think about violence. It's okay to control the Overton window. It's to control the public opinion, to control conversation.
Any opinion I disagree with, I'm going to go punch you in the face. You know, like it is the most un-American thing you can say is that you can't say that.
Yeah, if we're engaging in incitement, then everybody that engages in politics is engaging in incitement. Yeah. You know, define incitement.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, in a sane society, the people that gave that the green light to be aired on television would be facing some kind of criminal charge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
judiciary committee hearings. Yeah.
Yeah.
if you want to know what incitement is, watch that clip.
I've never seen anything like that in my lifetime.
No,
we've never said anything like that.
No, yeah. I mean that.
Well, no, I'm saying I've never seen anything like that. I mean that's like, I mean,
He even said it, you know, unprovoked.
Yeah. All right. So then we responded. We responded back to him and said, one, I initially contacted you in good faith to help you understand the claim of white genocide because your paper demonstrated a lack of understanding of the claim. You have not asked me a single question about the claim. Instead, you want to know about underground bases and hidden networks. My question is, do you actually care about genocide?
That was the one I sent on. I sent that email on my own accord. It was just like, okay, are we going to go in circles with this guy?
Right, but he wasn't addressing it. You're right, though. He hasn't once addressed.
Yeah. It's perfectly valid answer, really.
It is. All right, his response was, Ken, I do care, which is why I'm asking you simple questions. For example, you wrote that all threats of violence, which leads, this is funny that he focused in on this bit. Mm-hmm. You wrote that all threats of violence, which lead to censorship, come from the anti-white left. And I asked for more detail. That seems fairly simple, but you reply with seeming indignation. I'm wondering why.
He's not wondering why. I'll tell you that right now. He's not wondering why. He knows exactly why. He knows what he's been doing. And he's been he was deceptive throughout most of this. I gave him a chance, and it became clear that he just wanted to be deceptive about things and try to push some kind of Hollywood Nazi narrative.
And avoid... avoid actual charge of white
genocide. Yeah.
Well, I think you know that was a claim statement from us. So he honed in on that one that one point because he's like, "Where's the proof? Where's the proof? Where's the proof?" And we see this all the time with anti-whites, right?
They want us to go off in some other thing.
Exactly.
Instead of other than white genocide.
And that's why you said what you said. You know, like. You're not actually asking me anything about the claim.
But yeah, but he was conjuring up a conspiracy theory too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, which everybody else gets criticized for ever doing.
Yeah, he's allowed to come up with a paranoid conspiracy theory about Hollywood Nazis formulating legitimate talking points about genocide.
Then he goes on to say and says, I'm not asking about underground bases and hidden networks. They exist.
Well, essentially he is, though, when he's talking about conspiracies here.
Exactly. You know, who's this? Who are we connected with and what's this network that we work with? But whether your website is a standalone entity or has roots in a community, even if an online one. See it from my point of view. Anyone can set up a website and claim they stand for something out there, but do they? If they are just a few people with computers and IT skills, why should anyone care? After all, who do they speak for? Just themselves? I'm familiar with your claims. You make them clear on your site, and you also know I've read very widely if you look at the footnotes of my article.
Well, see, he wants to connect us with somebody who has committed violence, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the headline will be all over the media to try to discredit us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Secondly, who cares whether we're just a standalone entity or not?
Do we have a point?
Are we right?
Exactly. Because
that is no bearing whatsoever on whether we're right or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he asked why should I care? I mean, well, no, that's your field. You're going to, he was at the time, he's going around the United States on a anti-white tour of different universities to speak about white genocide. And he was presenting a false claim and pretending that it's a claim of white genocide when it wasn't.
No.
That's what he was doing this entire tour. And we come from the main group that disseminated the talking points, the whole conversation of white genocide, the whole topic, was propagated from us.
Right. From Bob Whitaker. Yep.
From Bob Whitaker and all of us.
We are the swarm. Bob,
we would not be together without Bob. None of us would know each other without him.
Go look up Bob Whitaker.
Yes, please. I mean, he knows all about
it. Research on him.
Yeah. And that's just it. And he mentioned in there that, look at the footnotes, I did do research. And he's right. I did look at the footnotes. He was going to This Is Europa, which is some friends of ours from Scandinavia that we know. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of good things put out some great articles about white genocide and anti-whites. Yeah. So he did his research. He knew all along, in my opinion, after doing this research, that he was presenting a false theory. A false claim of white genocide. He knew it all along, but he couldn't present the real theory or the real claim. I'm not going to call it a theory, but the real accusation, because he can't refute it. He can't refute the real accusation. So he has to make up a straw man, just like they did at the New York Times with that Farhad Manjoo, the author there, and he used the exact same kind of a fraudulent claim that it's about low birth rates and immigration. No, it's not. But that seems to be the narrative that they're going with. This white genocide is a claim that low birth rates and immigration is genocide. No, that isn't the claim.
But if we're such a tiny fringe group, you know, okay, why are they holding hearings on us? Why are you doing a speaking tour on us? You know, if nobody believes us, okay, fine. They got nothing to worry about, right?
Mm. Yeah. No need to discuss
why,
it.
Should I care? Why should he care?
Exactly. Why should you? Well, yeah, I don't care whether you care or not. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's just it. I mean, Dirk, you put your hat in the ring. Mm. You're the one who put your hat in the ring. We didn't put your hat in the ring for you. You're the one that started talking about it. You're the one that claims to be a quote-unquote scholar on this subject. You're the one who brought it up, started putting your hat in the ring. We're responding to you directly. We came at you very reasonably, in good faith, hoping to have a decent conversation here. But it appears that Dirk just wants to be deceptive and look for some kind of narrative and some kind of escape route from acknowledging exactly what we are saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this next response was a good one from us to Dirk. We said, we can't speak for other groups. Our aim is to have a free and open discussion of white genocide without being shouted down by screamers, attacked by the thugs, or jailed by thought police. We're saying we're against violence and we have a right to discuss white genocide. Are you saying we don't? You claim you don't understand. There is nothing Kathleen B. Liu could say that would justify genocide or justify denying us our right to object to genocide. Seriously? It strains credulity that a trained scholar would not understand this statement. Do you have any comment on CBS openly advocating political violence? We claim that all threats of violence leading to censorship comes from the anti-white left. Once stated, that should be self-evident to anyone following the news, even casually. Are you saying that is not the case? As a genocide scholar, you are aware that genocide is defined as any attempt to eliminate a group by any means, whether violent or not. You have been made aware of our actual claim of white genocide through mass non-white immigration and forced assimilation in every white country. Is it your claim that white genocide is not occurring?
That was brilliant. No, that's pretty much, that was Jeff right there.
There was. And here we go. Let's straight into his response. Ken, genocide requires the intention to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, religious or racial group. I don't see that intent in the 1965 Immigration Act, though it did obviously change the demography of this country. But was that its intent? What I'm reading now is that it was an unintended consequence. What do you mean by forced assimilation? whites being forced to assimilate? If so, to what? Do send links to your site that cover this if convenient. So now he brings up intent.
Yeah. So he's acknowledging that our what we're saying is happening, but he's saying that there's no intent.
Exactly.
Or he, well, he's saying there was no intent in 1965.
Yes.
That's all he's saying.
Yeah.
So but, therefore, there can never be intent, I guess, or there can never be genocide.
Yeah.
There can never
be intent. Right. And I brought this up before, but I did contact a genocide scholar from a well-known Ivy League university, and he's head of the humanities department and a specialist in genocide. And I gave him a scenario, and he responded back that if officials know that policies that they put in place are leading to the destruction of a group and they refuse to stop, that is genocide. That meets intent for genocide under international law. So when Dirk says that it doesn't apply in this situation, that's total nonsense. It certainly does. So we don't have to prove that there was intent behind the 1965 Immigration Act, despite the fact there are lawyers out there. A guy named Gabriel Chin from the University of California has done like a 2-hour-long speech on this topic that they did intend on changing the demographics of the United States through the 65 Immigration Act. But we don't even have to prove that. We can just deal in the now, and we have quotes from Joe Biden saying that it's the immigration is going to be nonstop, and we shouldn't want it to stop. And if you do, then you're a Nazi, blah blah blah, that kind of shit.
Right.
So we have intent. Intent is probably the easiest thing out of everything involved in this to prove. The fact that they refuse to stop and that they demonize, harass, slander, libel, and do everything humanly possible to try to prevent people from objecting to it, that proves intent.
It was interesting that he brought that up, right? That he brought up the 1965 Immigration Act and also stated that it did obviously change the demography of this country. And then what's brilliant there is that you go into, in our response there, we go into the fact that, well, if they're claiming it is an accident and that this demography change, you know, it happened by accident, well, now that we're pointing out that this is, that the result is genocide, then you would think that it would be their first point of call to stop it, to put an end to it. But that isn't the case.
Right.
You know, as you just said, Joe Biden, you know, they
want to know what they are doing.
They know what, you know, that's exactly it. So we have to be careful with discussing intent, as there is a way to tailgate us off
absolutely,
you know, proving this, because we don't, you know, it's so obvious that in that single statement, you know, it's so obvious. Well, if the consequence, and this was our response, guys, if the consequences were unintentional, then obviously it was an accident and they will stop, right? The refusal to stop is proof of intent. The demonization of those who object is proof of intent. Forced assimilation, there can be no white states, counties, towns, villages, neighborhoods, or schools. Those who object are often harassed, demonized, threatened, jailed, in some countries, fired from their jobs. Areas that are too white must be chased down with diversity, according to the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the latest HUD Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Act. And we sent some links to him as well. Law professor Gabriel Chin, which you also spoke about there on national TV, said that the consequences of the 1965 Act were intentional. And we sent him some clips to that as well. We can put these in the description of the video. He responded and said, I will read and review this material.
Yes.
But, how could an educated scholar not know about forced assimilation? Or
yeah, I mean, that,
whatever euphemism they want to... Whatever euphemism they want to call it, equal opportunity, you know, equality, diversity. Well, yeah, what is diversity?
When Laura was reading that, I was laughing. I'm like, he's a scholar on genocide, and he's asking, what do I mean by forced assimilation?
Right.
You ever heard of Little Rock, Arkansas, 1957?
Yeah. Right.
Paratroopers with fixed bayonets? You never heard of that, huh? Forced assimilation.
Or the forced busing that happened all over the United States in the 70s that had huge protests. In fact, that's where the Tea Party originated. I don't know if people, if you guys know that or if the listeners know that, but the Tea Party actually, the first time that they got together and called themselves a Tea Party was during forced busing in like Boston and Kentucky and San Francisco, all over, where they were busing white kids to black schools and busing black kids to white schools and doing this whole intermixing kind of thing forcibly through busing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I mean, and for Dirk, I mean, in Australia, the Aboriginals, the stolen generation, you know, and the whites were trying to, thinking they were doing the right thing of assimilating the Aboriginals into white culture, you know, taking the children and assimilating and forcibly assimilating them into the whites. So, I mean, it was stated then by Mick Dodson that assimilation is genocide. So why is it, where's the, you know, the double standard there? So you'll agree with that, no problem, Dirk, that, you know, that assimilation is genocide for the Aboriginals when we, you know, how evil white man that we did this. But yet when it's happening to white people, it's, oh, it's, you know, diversity is our strength.
Yeah. It's just all the rules get thrown out the window all of a sudden when we start talking about white kids. I mean, that's just the way it works, apparently. I'm sorry?
Yeah, with the anti-whites, exactly.
Yeah, with the anti-whites, all of a sudden, you know, everything changes once...
Double standards, yeah.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Anyone that pretends not to know there's forced integration and forced assimilation, they are not arguing in good faith.
Exactly. You're dealing with somebody that's being deceptive. But of course, you know, in a public conversation, even when you know somebody's being deceptive... it's better just to go along with that. I mean, basically their claim is that they don't understand anything and they're not intelligent enough to keep up with the conversation. So you just go with that. Just, you know, repeat yourself if you have to.
Exactly.
But in this situation, we're talking to somebody that's a scholar. He's spent all years studying this. He knows that he's being deceptive. And we know it too. And of course, any scholar, that genocide scholar that's going to be listening to this podcast, they know very well what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. So then we responded after he said he would review the material, saying, I'm interested to know about your speech today as I couldn't be there. I'm in Ohio. Is there going to be a video released? Could you provide me with the text or notes of your speech? Not sure if you're aware, but your speech at University of California was uploaded to YouTube 2 days ago. And we sent in a link to that. Then we said, that's fine if you don't want any more contact with us. Still, we would appreciate your text, notes, or slides on your latest speech, as your speeches have been about our activism. I don't understand why this would be an issue. Is the speech something you wish to conceal? He wrote back saying, obviously, Ken, I'm very busy and don't feel compelled to answer all emails I've received within 48 hours. He needs a little time to think about what he's going to say.
Yeah.
Number one, my paper was not recorded. There was no video or podcast to share, nor did I write a text. So there's nothing to send you. I went through your and other white genocide sites. And then we you know, how convenient, you know, his paper has no text.
Yes. It wasn't recorded. Paper.
Yeah, he didn't have a speech prepared or some sort of outline to his presentation.
Yeah, he's a genius. He does it all.
All in his head.
All in his head.
Contemporaneous.
Okay, I assessed them empirically and determined that they do not adduce evidence for their contentions. The dispersed and decontextualized pieces of evidence they bring to the table to empirically underpin the various limbs of the white genocide thesis simply don't stack. What does that mean?
Simply don't stack up.
That's his long way of saying I'm having trouble refuting it, but I'm just going to say it's wrong. I mean...
But here's the only time where he actually tries to address our claim.
Yeah, he does this
paragraph here.
For example, in no way can the housing authority's pressure on Marin County, 94% white according to the CNN report, to erect a few buildings to accommodate poorer Californians, including black ones, be seen as a genocidal policy. It's hysterical to think so because at most the percentage of whites may become, say, 70%, and that is not tantamount to destruction of a group, nor is the policy intended as a one of destruction. Your notion of destruction is grossly inflated. Diversity is not, in fact, genocide, despite what you say. Destruction means a group cannot reproduce itself.
Ooh. Well, you know,
that's to have more babies argument. essentially, when he says destruction is only when a group cannot reproduce itself. Oh. Well, okay, then there was no Aborigine genocide because they were allowed to reproduce with themselves. Nobody was preventing them from doing so. Same with the Holocaust. I don't think there were, you know, they were prevented from, Jews were prevented worldwide from having babies.
He says, I don't see that happening in Marin. Besides that, housing authority order has been suspended by the current government, so it's not operative, which is not true. We found that out, didn't we? That the HUD
assuming he was talking about the HUD affirmatively furthering fair housing.
Yeah.
That actually is still in effect.
Right.
Yeah. Marco Rubio tried to pass a law that would get rid of it. It never went through Congress. It was introduced, and that's as far as it went. It never even got a vote.
Right. You know, we were saying, I think, you know, we've said, we covered this as well, but forced integration is the law of the land in every white country. Whites can't have so much as a school anywhere. The conditions of interbreeding are forced everywhere. There are white people, and that's why it's genocide.
Mm-hmm. Genocide is any attempt to eliminate a group by any means.
Mm.
And, of course, he ignored the part in the initial email where I said whites are forbidden by law from having any territory of their own. That's if non-whites want to come in and take over that area, by law, whites are required to allow it to happen. So he ignored that part.
The only thing stopping that in Marin County right now is just the price of homes. You know, they wanted to force them to have lower income housing so they could... So that the non-whites could move in.
Yeah. Yeah, why are they doing that? I mean, why is that so important? I thought skin color doesn't matter. Why does it matter if Marin County is 96% white or however white it is?
Exactly, yeah.
No, they take active measures to make anything too white less white.
Mm-hmm.
And if Marin County were to say, you know, we're not going to let any non-whites in, well, then they, you know, they'd probably get thrown in jail.
Yep. Yeah, it's housing discrimination.
That's, so where it's not happening naturally, they use force.
It's not happening naturally anywhere because it is total force everywhere.
Mm.
When white people have the option to white flight, I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah,
when
the existing level of force is not sufficient, then they step up the force, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. They do.
Mm. Yep. He says, these white genocide sites fear that whites will become a minority by the middle of this century, having been a large majority before 1965.
Yeah, in white countries, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, why is that a problem? Why is it? Blacks are majority in most of Africa. The Japanese are majority in Japan. Chinese are majority in China. Vietnamese are majority in Vietnam. Yeah. Why is that a problem for whites to be a majority somewhere?
Exactly. You know, what sort of Japanese wouldn't fear becoming a minority in their own country?
Yeah, why wouldn't we object to that?
Yep. Yeah.
We're being forced to become minorities everywhere. Mm-hmm. But no non-white has been forced to live in a white country since 1865.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
If it's so horrible for them, why do they come here? Yeah, but then being choosing to be minorities in white countries is not the same as us being forced to become minorities in all of our homelands.
Yeah.
There's no compare. There's nothing comparable there. There's no moral equivalency there. They have their own countries.
That's it.
They have lots of countries. Blacks have 80-plus countries.
Most of the world is non-white.
That's it. Yep. Yeah, it says that, you know, the predicted white minority in every white country is white genocide. You know, how do you think that, what do you think is going to happen? And especially when they force assimilate and integrate, you know, and they promote the conditions of interbreeding with all the non-whites, then, you know, the end result is white genocide. I mean, it's these people that claim, oh, I don't know,
they're just doing that. They don't want to have the conversation.
Yeah.
That's what it is. They're just doing anything possible to escape that whole conversation.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is that we're just going to have to feel the way they felt. Well, but it's not comparable.
No, it's not.
No.
they're, like you said, that they are minorities voluntarily. Nobody's forcing them, but we are being forced to be minorities with no option of self-determination, no alternative. You know, blacks have an alternative. They don't like it here if they think that they're oppressed here, or non-whites in general, if they think that they are oppressed in white countries. They have 100 countries in the world to choose from without white people in them, or with very, very limited numbers of white people within those countries that they can go to and escape whatever problems that, that they perceive are happening to them within white countries. White people don't have that choice. And especially once we are officially minorities in Europe and America, we will definitely have no option, no alternative.
Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes on here to say, the scholarly consensus is still that the migration law of 1965 did not foresee the extent of these changes. In response, you assert that the continuing assent to this change implies a genocidal intent to destroy. So he addressed our claim there of saying that that proves intent. You know, we said that, well, if they figured it out that was going to happen, that they would stop it, right? Yeah. And he says, again, this is mistaken. Consigning a majority to minority status is not destruction in the sense of genocide convention or in Lemkin's broader meaning or in any sense. You know, there he's, you know, fair enough. You know, fair enough if that was allowed to be the case, that white, you know, that they were immigrating, that whites were allowed to separate and have areas that they were allowed to remain white. But that's not the case. Forced separation is required.
And again, he is acknowledging there that that whites are being denied the human right to self-determination. He admits, he's like, okay, yeah, whites are being turned from majorities to minorities in their own countries and all of their countries. That is a total denial of self-determination. It means that white people, our destiny, our future is going to be determined by by a democratic process where whites are outnumbered. So our destiny is going to be determined by people that are non-white, that are either indifferent to our existence as a group or hostile against our existence. That is a total denial of self-determination. And Dirk, in his own email, is admitting this, that this is a human rights violation. What he's not saying that it's a human rights violation, of course, but he's admitting that a human rights violation against whites is taking place.
Mm. Yeah.
And again, obviously, if you're imposing policies that will lead to the destruction of a group over a period of years, there will be a point in there where white people become a minority. Are they going to stop then?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's my other thing to Dirk is he's like, oh, this is apocalyptic tone. Okay. Well, Dirk, let me ask you, at what percentage are white people allowed to object? Mm-hmm. When we're 30% of the population in our own countries, is that when it's going to say we'll be able to say, okay, maybe we should have a right. Maybe we should have human rights. What's the number, Dirk?
Right.
What number do you have? And of course, we all know the answer is that you think whites should never have the option of survival.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're not saying that these policies are genocide because they turn white people into minorities. We're saying that they're genocide because they meet the definition of genocide.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But I will say, though, that deliberately turning white people into minorities in all of their countries and having a democratic system there, that is a total denial of self-determination.
Yeah, which he is admitting to.
Yeah, he's admitting to that. He's admitting a human rights violation is occurring. So, even aside from genocide, we could just, okay, maybe you don't think it's genocide, but at least you're pleading guilty to human rights violations. And you're a genocide scholar. Way to go, pal. You're brilliant.
Yeah, you know, it is, you know, that it is all coupled, you know, the fact of being turned into a minority and the propaganda and demoralization and demonization of white people, you know, it is dehumanizing and everything that is part and parcel of how, I mean, there's, you can't just say, oh, you know, whites becoming a minority doesn't class as genocide. Well, we're not saying that either. You know, we're not making that claim at all.
That's not our claim. That isn't our claim. Yeah. Neither is we're not claiming that low birth rates in mass immigration is genocide either.
He goes on to say, you know, the fact that you think so is a telling statement about the status of blacks and other minorities in the U.S. today. So on your logic, they, blacks, are now the victims of genocide because they are the current minority as they claim here. You fear standing in their shoes. I say we should build societies in which no minority is mistreated and fears mistreatment. I mean, how stupid can you get?
Yeah, he's a very naive guy.
What a stupid statement that Africans in, you know, that here, the blacks here are a minority, so they must be facing genocide? Man, no. They have Africa.
Yeah, they have the largest
their gene pool being genocided.
Yeah, black people, as far as the world is concerned, they have the largest growing population in human history. They have 80 plus countries, essentially all to themselves. You know, they have half of the world's natural resources.
Yeah, I'd love to be standing in their shoes.
Yeah, and white people felt bad about movies they watch about slavery to the point that they elected a black guy to become president of a white country. What more do they want? I mean, what? So if blacks are not being subjected to any form of genocide within white countries, and if they were, they have an option of escape. White people do not have that option.
But I mean, nobody's turning every black country non-black.
Yeah,
you know, that is what is happening to every white country. Every white country is being turned non-white. So that is just laughable. I mean, that is so childish, that response.
Yeah, that's very elementary. It's an elementary response for a genocide scholar.
So Jeff, you had written here that says, you know, that we're not in their shoes. No one's turning every black country non-black, but every white country is being deliberately turned non-white. Blacks are not being turned into minorities in 50-plus black countries in Africa, but whites are being deliberately turned into minorities in every white country. No black has been forced to live in a white country since 1865, but whenever whites flee diversity, they are chased down. It's not equivalent because non-whites all have their own countries to go to if they think they are being oppressed. Whites have been minorities in non-white countries. History shows us that whites are not treated nearly as well as minorities as whites treat minorities, unless whites were in power. If whites treat non-whites so horribly, why do they all want to live with us? Yeah, that's that. I love that meme, you know, let's go be oppressed. Whites have always been a minority in the world, but now they are being turned into minorities in all their own homelands. No comparable thing is being done to any other group. This whole program of massive non-white immigration and forced assimilation into every white country is to create a society in which no minority is mistreated. Dirk has loyalty to humanity that has no loyalty to him. Yeah, exactly.
Very naive of him. I mean, when you talk about the loyalty to humanity, again, he does. He's one of these people that believes humanity has loyalty to him just because he has loyalty to humanity. It's extremely naive.
But where's the speaking out against the mistreatment of white people? You know.
Yeah. Why aren't white people included in on this humanity that he's talking about?
Yeah.
And then he goes on, Dirk continues and says, as I mentioned below, you guys need to dial back the apocalyptic language implicit in the genocide claim.
Yeah, how do we talk about genocide in a non-apocalyptic tone?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I thought we were pretty calm, you know, we were against violence. What's the correct way to talk about genocide, Dirk?
You're making genocide sound like an atrocity, Jeff. Laura, come on, guys.
Yeah. He then said, you deflected and talked about environmental apocalyptic language, for which there is a good reason. Don't you read the IPCC report? If you believe the world scientists are mistaken, ask yourself who knows best.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
you're not asking us whether our claim is true or not. You're saying we shouldn't talk about it because it's apocalyptic.
Yeah.
So,
and plus,
okay, well, then maybe you shouldn't talk about climate change because it's apocalyptic, right?
Exactly. He totally missed our point to that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an appeal to authority argument as well, saying, oh, well, the scholars, the left-wing scholars all agree, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah. You know what? 100% of biblical scholars believe that the Bible is the word of God. Does that mean it's true? They're biblical scholars. Are you going to disagree with them? Who knows best, Dirk?
Yeah.
All these professors say professors should run the economy, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, plumbers say plumbers should run the economy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he says, "Oh, the apocalyptic language for the global warming and that, you know, for which there is good reason." Well, we have good reason as well, right? You know, we are showing and laying out how this is. You know, and he claims it. You know, yes, it's happening, and it could be the result of it, but it was unintentional. Well, now we're showing that this is happening, and this is the result, and we want to talk about it and start having people like him and, you know, as many people as we can talking about the fact that this is the result, this is what is happening, without being silenced and censored. But that's, you know, he's denying the fact that it's happening or allowing us to even speak about it.
Well, he's actually not denying that it's happening. He's just...
he's denying the intent, that it's intentional.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, his argument has kind of changed. Because once he said that his argument was about intent, that pretty much means that everything we're saying is true.
It's true, right.
And now he's got to walk that one back in order to save face among his peers in the left-wing community. The anti-white community.
He then goes on to say, no doubt you read the letter of the recent San Diego shooter on Saturday. Like Tarrant, he invoked white genocide. He talks about the destruction of the European race. You say you disavow violence, but there are very violent implications in what you postulate on your website, which also talks about revolution. You know, we've talked about this before, about, you know, any political can have violent adherence.
You could justify the silencing any political position by that reasoning.
Or, I mean, we've already covered this during the Christchurch, Christchurch shooting. I mean, it goes back again to the JFK quote, that those who make a peaceful revolution impossible make a violent revolution inevitable. Right. So, you know, we are always talking about diplomacy and having a discussion. We never talk about doing anything of the sort. So this whole trying to tie us together with violent extremism is absolutely ridiculous. And it's libel and slander as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. How violent the struggle for white human rights gets is completely up to you anti-whites.
Yep.
Yeah.
You say you're going to use violence to prevent us white people from having human rights? Okay. So be it.
And didn't Bob talk about as well about, you know, all these other shooters, or the guy that shot all the cops and that, you know, did they go searching through his apartment and get literature and call out, you know, the anti-white, you know, the left or communism or anything that that these other groups or shooters believe in? You know, do they go and start attacking, you know, their belief system as to why they got taken, you know, led to, you know, violent ends? No, it's only white people who have pro-white views and commit these atrocities that they attack, and they bunch us together and say that we're all the same. Well, we're not.
Yeah, and there was, I mean, just like a day after Dirk sent us that email, there was that shooting at a school where it was leftists, anti-whites, went up to shot up a STEM school. I think it was in North Carolina. And the media, what did the media do? As soon as they found out that the perpetrators didn't fit the mold, the narrative that they were looking for, they buried the story. We haven't heard about it since. Now, like, it's buried down the memory hole. Never happened.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Same with that, with the cop shooter one. You never hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the talking heads, the conservative pundits should be bringing this stuff up. They should be bringing up the Dallas shooting. They should be bringing up the congressman or the senator that was shot playing baseball, and all the mass shooting that happened there. They should be bringing this up all the time, but they don't. They allow the left to bury it. They help the left bury it. The left still haven't shut up about Dylann Roof. But the left get a pass on all their violence, and it's just buried down the memory hole and never to be spoken of again.
Yeah. You know, he says that we attack Republican politicians.
Positing.
Yourselves as the real opposition.
Yeah.
You know, that's true.
We are.
But then he goes on to tell us that we should take down, that we are engaging in incitement and you should stop. I urge you to take down your website. Again, he never addressed the question where we said about CBS. You know, they are on a network inciting violence against us, and he has nothing to say about that.
He just wants us to shut up because his field of expertise is genocide, and we're pretty much throwing a monkey wrench in it and making him look like a guy that has no integrity and no courage.
Right.
And that's the ball's in his court on that one, whether or not he wants to have integrity and have the courage, or if he just wants to go along being a fraud. That's up to him. It's not up to us. It has nothing to do with our website. Stop blaming our website for you lacking any integrity.
Yeah. And I particularly like this next one. He says, I also urge you to go to college so you can learn how to reason about issues in a calm and rational manner, as well as learn perspectival thinking, the capacity to understand the perspective of others.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm the one that has, we're the ones that have a problem understanding his perspective.
I know.
Yeah.
He made no effort to see our perspective.
If I go to the university, I'm going to learn how to lose arguments to college grads or to high school grads, basically.
Get indoctrinated into political correctness.
Yeah, I'm going to get indoctrinated and learn how to back away from any disagreement from people that have valid things to say.
We're speaking heresy.
We are, indeed. His last one then says, without necessarily agreeing with it, learn not to think in terms of slogans and understand that the processes of policy formulation and implementation, like migration, especially in an unwieldy polity like the US, are complex and even opaque, and not steered by anyone with nefarious designs against you. Stop thinking in terms of conspiracies. That is childlike. I know you will at first flinch and bristle reading this, but deep down you will know it's true, or you will, if you can, emancipate from the white genocide echo chamber and begin to think for yourself. Oh my god.
Yeah,
educated equals brainwashed. Yes.
Yeah, but he's trying to fit us into the Nazi conspiracy theory. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very adult of him. He started out this whole conversation being very adult, trying to correlate us to movie Nazis that he saw on television.
It's just hysterical from a leftist. All my life, I've heard racist, Nazi supremacist, bigot. Nazi racist, Nazi supremacist, bigots. Diversity is our strength. And don't talk in slogans, you know.
Yeah.
Skin color doesn't matter. Diversity is a strength. But if you say, diversity is a code word for white genocide, all of a sudden that's a slogan and you're not thinking for yourself.
He doesn't understand then how messages work and how consistent messages and
he doesn't like it when we use them
means exactly yeah like when we use it, but it's all good for the other side, exactly all the ones that you just said. You know, diversity is our strength and we all bleed red and all that, you know, their slogans and thinking in that.
But we didn't do that in any of this email, you know.
I guess
we were engaging. When we're out engaging with anyone, it's in the field. Yeah. We do what works, which means we repeat talking points, but we didn't do that here.
No, we didn't.
At all, really.
Yeah, we actually went off our talking points.
It must be because it's white genocide, you know, the slogan, white genocide. Well, but that's exactly, it reinforces our whole position that we're not allowed to talk about it. So the only thing that we can do is repeat simple talking points to be able to force the conversation into an arena where we can discuss it. Otherwise, you don't allow us to discuss it. So all we can do is hit them with the simple truths that are happening. And that's how propaganda works.
And another point here is that he initially said that, I mean, he was responding to that Brandon Tarrant, his manifesto about white genocide. And he was going by that, by what he said. So essentially what he's saying is that, well, if you want people to take you seriously, you got to go shoot up a bunch of Muslims. And then I'll respond to what you have to say. Otherwise, you're just people with some tech right. skills that have with a website.
Yeah.
So exactly. He's encouraging violence.
Right.
He's saying, well, the only way you're going to get hurt is if you go out and shoot people.
Right. Yeah.
If you won't engage with us, then.
Yeah. Well, who will you engage with?
We're good cop.
If the socialist or the leftist said, you know, keep calling anyone to your left a communist, you know, maybe you'll end up with communism. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you won't engage with us, then, you know, maybe you'll end up with something a lot worse, huh?
Mm. Right. Yeah, this is funny, you know, that the same group who screams Nazi, racist, white supremacist over and over is complaining about slogans and repetitions.
In echo chambers, yeah. I mean,
they're the ones demanding an echo chamber. They're the ones demanding that no heresy be spoken or uttered. Yep. We're the ones that want an open discussion. We're the ones that want to get out of an echo chamber.
That's something that, you're right, a lot of people don't really understand is that we couldn't be in an echo chamber if we wanted to.
Mm.
Even if the three of us wanted to be in an echo chamber, we can't. Anytime we turn on the TV, we are being hit with a barrage of anti-white propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime we do anything, we're hit with it. We can't be in an echo chamber. Even if we tried, it's very easy for someone like Dirk to be in his anti-white echo chamber. And that's why he has really no concept of the whole idea of not hating white people is completely foreign to him because he's been in this echo chamber for far too long.
Or that whites could be under attack or that whites have rights. Yeah.
Right.
Talking about an echo chamber, you got to be kidding me, right? Echo chamber. Then why are you discussing it? You know, if we are in an echo chamber, only talking to other whites that are listening to us about this, then why is it that
we contacted him.
Yeah, Ken reached out to you, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was speaking on white genocide. He was doing his presentations and trying to, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't contact us about it, though.
They never reach out and get any...
He wants his speech to be an echo chamber. He doesn't. He wouldn't know what to do if one of us showed up there and started asking questions. Other than asking someone to remove us.
Mm. Exactly.
Because that's essentially how this conversation ended. You should shut down your website because I can't refute.
Right. And then he says that, you know, white genocide is conspiracy. Thinking in terms of conspiracies. Well. You know, this isn't a conspiracy. This is out in the open. Everything that is happening, this is their goal. The anti-whites want it. I mean, how many quotes do we have from anti-whites stating that there can be no ethnically pure, you know, country in Europe? And what's the Barbara Spector one? You know, she's saying that, you know, Europe will not be the monolithic country that it once was. You know, they're outright saying that is the goal. This isn't a conspiracy. This isn't happening by accident.
We know that. Dirk knows that, or at least now we've solidified the fact that he does know that. He is very much aware of that now. And what he decides to do from this point on is up to him. The ball's in his court in that. He can continue being a fraud if he wants, or he can have some integrity and start just being honest about it. It's up to him, not up to us.
Exactly. The next one, he says, this means acquiring some Christian humility and doing some reading with an open mind and heart. Mm. We need some...
Dirk is very open-minded.
And religion. We need to be...
He doesn't seem to care about white kids, yeah.
Yeah, he's not open-minded to the idea that white people have human rights.
Yeah.
Not open to that. That seems to be completely foreign to him. It's something that clearly he's never thought about before.
He then said, I grew up as a child of a German Lutheran immigrant mother and Australian Episcopalian father, and I've had to confront the crimes of my various forebears. Oh, my God. And this comes back to our point, you know, if you believe you're on stolen land, Dirk, you should hand it back and head back, you know, like, come on. Stop being virtue signaling, saying, oh, you know, everyone, this is wrong, Aboriginals, and that's their land, and
he's that. About crimes that Australians committed in Australia. Well, hold on, Dirk. Didn't you say that turning a majority to a minority status is not destruction? It's exactly. Not crime? Didn't you say that? So yeah. What crimes are you talking about, buddy?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, now all of a sudden.
To increase diversity in Australia, that's all.
Yeah, right.
That's it. You know, they should have been welcoming assimilation. You know, they are they racists?
Yeah. What are you doing to censor these Aborigine supremacists?
Yeah. Derek? You know, in response to that, Jeff, you'd written here that all races have conquered and enslaved. Whites have committed no unique crimes, but they have an infinite number of unique achievements. If you think whites are uniquely evil, you're wrong. This confirms our suspicion that your real job is not genocide studies, but white demoralization. White self-hatred is sick. Seek help. I love it.
Like, hey, look, I'm a self-hating white guy.
Right.
And I'm guilty. And well, then leave. Give your job to an Aborigine. And give your land to an Aborigine and get the fuck out of Australia, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Pack up the talk. Talk is cheap.
And he goes on to say, it's not been easy as my childish notions were to believe that my culture was the best. But I eventually saw that Europeans are not the indigenous people of Australia. Aborigines are.
Oh, you saw that.
Where are white people indigenous? Aborigines didn't spring from the ground. They came from somewhere else, just like whites in Australia. Indigenous human rights laws state that forced assimilation is ethnocide. So if you don't prefer your people or culture, leave. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Yeah. Africa.
You don't have to believe you're the best to oppose your own genocide, though. Or to be loyal to your own kind.
Aborigines apparently to him think that they're better than everybody else, and that's why they should have human rights, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, if you just take his arguments and turn it around, and it shows how big of an idiot this guy is. I mean, he's telling me to go to university, what, so I can have these lame arguments? Lack thereof? I mean, well, I'm sorry.
It just goes to, you know, they're all for championing for Aboriginal rights and their right to land and having, you know, renaming Ayers Rock back to Uluru or the Aboriginal names, and they have the right to exist as a group. Well, then you also must agree that white people have a right to exist as a group. Okay, so he says, it's a matter of being aware of how our settler colonial societies developed and understanding their human and environmental costs as well as their achievements, so we can remedy past and present inequalities.
Yeah, none of that justifies.
So white demoralization. We got to be forever guilty for doing things hundreds of years ago that every race has done. Yeah,
it's done. Yeah, exactly.
What about white achievements, though?
There's no such thing.
Absolutely.
All of white achievements came from other people.
Humanity.
Humanity,
that's true. I mean, that's what...
Everything good white people did was done by humanity. Everything bad white people did was done by whites, yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Amen to that. That's basically the narrative here.
Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. Everyone gets a homeland but white people. Where is the equality there? All races have conquered and enslaved. The only people who give a damn about the environment are white people. Every race you call indigenous has taken part in environmental degradation and forced species into extinction, including Australian Aborigines. There was a mass extinction in Australia right after the first humans arrived there. Siberians hunted the North American megafauna into extinction. What you call indigenous people slaughtered, enslaved, and drove each other out all the time. Indigenous, the last non-white group to violently conquer a piece of land before white people showed up there. Congoids are no more indigenous to southern Africa than white people. In fact, less so since they got there later. Do you think all Congoids should leave southern Africa? Do you think Ojibwe should give back reservation land they violently conquered from Lakota? What's your take on Turkish colonization, Japanese colonization, Inca colonization, Aztec colonization, Arab colonization? We bring up white genocide. You talk about the horrible You talk about how horrible white people are for doing things hundreds of years ago that every race has done, and far worse. Under the circumstances, that is justifying genocide. If you don't think white genocide is happening, why are you trying to justify it? Yep, that was a good, exactly. You know, he comes out and stating, you know, demonizing white people, saying, you know, that we should be genocided because of our past bad acts.
So, I mean, he was questioning intent before, but now his motive, he's telling us his motive.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We've established a motive here. We've got intent, so
it's we need to remedy past and present inequalities. Like, yeah. Oh, I like this next one. I don't appreciate your comrade Laura Fitzgerald sending me this pathetic, threatening Twitter message. I said, Dirk, no response. Are you scared, or is silence your only tactic? We have you on record with our email correspondence. We look forward to reviewing your presentation for this past weekend. Regards, Laura Fitzgerald. I mean, as we all were trying to do was trying to get information from him to be able to review it, to review his position on where he stood on this discussion of white genocide. What's funny is, though, you know, he followed me on Twitter and he and I followed him back so that we could direct message, and I sent him maybe 3 messages and he didn't respond to any of them. So that's why, you know, that was the last one I wrote and said, you know, are you scared, or is silence your only tactic? Is that all that
he's
you can do?
He's still following you?
He is, yep. Yeah, it's funny that he found that threatening, eh? Like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't see how. What is that?
Paranoid. He's paranoid.
Laura does not need to go to college to learn good manners. We should all learn them at home. You can share this message with her. So apparently I don't have manners. I'm not polite in my objection to white genocide.
Yeah. Genocidal sociopaths deserve more respect.
His last bit here.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. I mean, you were, there's nothing wrong with what you wrote, Laura. Come on.
He says, I can't devote more time to our thread, though I am open to hearing from you eventually, if and when you've undertaken the journey to implore the points in 4, 5, and 6 above. You can see what I think about issues from my writings here. I won't be answering any more emails for now. You have enough to think about.
Yeah, you gave us quite a bit there, Derek.
Yes.
To talk about. Not a whole lot to think about.
There wasn't a single thing that was new that he presented, you know, address.
Yeah, there's nothing to think about, Derek.
We
lots to talk about, but not to think about. Not from what you said. You've offered nothing new. It's nothing that we haven't heard before, and nothing that we can't refute.
We see their game plan for dealing with the white genocide meme. They're going to strawman our argument, shoot down the strawman, and tell us we can't talk about white genocide because it might cause trouble.
On Facebook, I posted an analogy about that he's basically trying to deconstruct the white genocide claim the same way you would try to debunk a ham sandwich conspiracy theory that, you know, bread is not a sandwich, and ham is not a sandwich. Lettuce is not a sandwich. Cheese is not a sandwich. None of those things amount to a sandwich. So I don't know where people are getting off talking about some kind of ham sandwich that doesn't exist. Right. Of course, failing to point out, when you piece it all together in a certain order, yes, it's a ham sandwich.
Right.
That's what you got there. And what we have here with all these policies of mass immigration, demonization, promotion of anti-white policies, all of this amounts to genocide.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy. That's really good. So we have to keep making the free speech argument. The free speech argument is the moral high ground. We suspected that Professor Moses was a fraud. Now he has confirmed it. His job is not to raise genocide awareness. His job is to demoralize white people into accepting the genocidal conditions being forced on them. This is the same with all so-called genocide awareness groups. They all exist to demoralize white people. Professor Moses probably didn't sign up for this. We imagine him frantically emailing his colleagues asking, "How do I respond to this?" Well, there you have it, guys. That was our interaction with Professor Dirk Moses, the genocide scholar from Australia, who claims that he is for genocide awareness, but is only about demoralizing white people. We wanted to thank Identity Dixie for putting up our podcast on their website. We've now been hosted with them, which is fantastic to reach a broader audience. So look for us on there. And we'll add some links, into the bottom of this, into this YouTube and for further research for people.
If you like this kind of content and want it to continue, please subscribe to our channel. Also, consider making a donation by going to fightwhitegenocide.com and hitting the donate button. All right, thanks for listening, and look out for our next podcast.
Sounds good. See you guys.
See you.
Bye.
All right, later.